Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Minneapolis at his home, not in our office because of the pandemic, is Jerry Zak, the CEO of the association. And we're going to be talking today about really what's on tap and what's coming next for SCCE and HCCA. Jerry, thanks for taking the time away from all the other work to talk to us.
Oh, thanks. My pleasure, Adam.
So first, can you give folks an overview of how the SCCE, HCCA is functioning these days and what we can and can't do for the members?
Sure, be happy to. We've got about 85 employees at the association. Almost everybody's working successfully from home at this point. We've got about 5-6 people who come into the office on a pretty regular basis handling things. You know, it's interesting because in the early days, you know, when our stay-at-home order first took effect here in Minnesota, we really had to scramble. Our IT team was just tremendous because, you know, we had very few employees who were accustomed to working remotely, really. So there was a lot of computer setup and training that had to be done, all in about 1 week's time so we could get everybody working from home. Now, over those first few weeks, you know, we overcame most of those types of challenges, you know, doing things remotely and addressing inquiries from members and all that sort of stuff. We had, you know, had to work out some glitches. It was a little slow initially, but after a couple of weeks, everything was mostly up and running. But for about that first month, I'm trying to remember exactly how long it was, but at least a month, maybe 5-6 weeks, we weren't allowed to have anyone in the office. So things really came to a standstill in some areas, like processing anything that came through the mail, shipping of orders, things like that. So that stuff really suffered for about a month there. Now, over the last month or so, now that we've had that small team back in the office handling the mail, all the shipping, receiving, you know, all that sort of stuff is now fully operational. So for the, you know, and we're doing everything we did pre-pandemic at this point. Things are back on track with, like I said, a very small team in the office. We've got no plans to bring lots of people back into the office yet. We're looking out for everyone's safety. Going to continue with most of the folks working remotely for really the foreseeable future. We're going to play that by ear and not bring people back until it's really safe to do so. As for the sort of the other effects of the pandemic on our organization, you know, it's the organization did a really nice job over the years of gradually building up a financial reserve to be prepared for something like this. I'm sure they never had a pandemic in mind when they were doing it, but they nonetheless put a little bit of money aside every year to be prepared for a crisis. And now that we have a crisis, you know, we're able to be very resilient in that regard. And we haven't had to cut back on our programs or our staff and activities to be able to absorb the financial losses that we are incurring. Definitely financial losses from not being able to hold many of our educational events, but we were prepared for it and we'll make it through this and come out actually probably very, very strong, stronger than pre-pandemic on the other side of this.
Yeah, I got to say, as a staff member, it's been interesting. You know, it used to be I was one of the few, and for a while, one of only two people working remotely, and watching all the adjustments and how fluid it's really been and seamless, and, you know, seeing all the new kinds of things we're doing is great. So let's talk about the conferences. Now, we switched a lot of meetings to virtual, including all the regional meetings. What about upcoming meetings like the CEI? What do you want to share with people?
Well, yeah, there's kind of a backstory to all this. You know, when all this first broke in really mid-March, the HCCA's Compliance Institute was the first one really affected by it, where we had to convert from a live conference to a virtual conference on about 2 weeks' notice. And, you know, we had about 1,500 people attend that. So, you know, a little bit more than half of what we would normally have had in the live event. So it was a tremendous effort on the part of, you know, our team. And a lot of people pitched in for that. More recently, just a couple weeks ago, the higher education and the research compliance conferences were also converted to virtual, and about 400 folks attended that. So again, a really good turnout. You know, that's probably 80, 75, 80% of what we would have had at the live event for those conferences. As you mentioned, the regionals are being converted to virtual as we go. So virtually all of them up through September at this point are being converted over to an online, you know, virtual platform. And the nice thing about that is, you know, the whole idea of what is regional kind of goes away when you go virtual. So something that is starts out as being, you know, an event that only people in one particular metropolitan region or region of the country would attend, now all of a sudden people anywhere can sit in on it. But you know, all people have to do is look up to all the different agendas and pick which one, you know, suits their needs best. We also recently just did for the very first time a virtual version of our investigations workshop. So when we scale it back, so that's normally a 2-day workshop, and we converted it into a single day virtual event. The logic there being the 2-day workshop has a lot of interactive activities and exercises and things of that nature that don't really convert to a virtual environment very well. But all the other information, the technical and other educational content, could be done virtually. And the two presenters, Eric and Al, did a great job for the about 120 people signed up for that. So now, back to the core point of your question going forward, you know, we'll continue converting the regional events over to virtual until it's safe to begin having live events there. And we'll also be doing our regional conferences and that investigations virtual event for non-US time zones, so that folks in Europe, Asia, you know, the folks in South America, other parts of the world can participate, you know, in those events at times that are convenient for them using regional speakers, for a combination of regional and US-based speakers, for those events. Now, of course, we have other large conferences on the calendar for the fall. So, starting with CEI in September, and then going up through November with the Healthcare Enforcement Compliance Conference and a few others. So, at this point, each one of those is planned to be a live in-person event, but we will be ready to convert those over to a virtual format if circumstances warrant doing that. You know, the health and safety of our members, the attendees, exhibitors, and of course our own employees are incredibly important. But you know, anyone listening to this podcast, you know, you also need to know that we often need to wait on the hotels to make a final call on these things, because hotels are sometimes quite reluctant to allow us to cancel an event without incurring a sizable penalty very far in advance. You know, the hotels like to hold out hope that an event we'll be able to have the event, even at a reduced size. So I guess it's hard to blame them. You know, they're looking out for their own financial affairs and their employees and their owners or shareholders, but this can complicate and delay our own decision making on some of these. So a lot of these, we just have to kind of play it by ear, work with the hotel. We're in weekly, you know, communications with virtually every one of these hotels that we're having these larger events at to kind of work through what makes sense.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult living on the edge this way and knowing that, you know, 3 months out, the hotels just won't deal with it. But at the same token, what's been nice is with the, you know, availability, I mean, to go to virtual meetings, there's actually a lot more educational choices available for people now than there was before this started. Now, one set of meetings we haven't moved to virtual are the academies. A lot of people have been curious about that. Can you discuss why we're holding up on changing those to a virtual format and what the plans there are?
Yeah, the academies are tricky. You know, one of the absolute best things about the academies is that they have a high degree of interaction between instructors and the attendees, as well as among the attendees themselves. And I don't just mean networking, right? There's a lot of group discussion, problem solving, case studies, things like that. And quite honestly, we haven't yet found a virtual platform that comes close enough to replicating that experience. We're looking though. You know, we're continuing to look. Our meetings team is constantly doing demos and even sitting in on other conferences that might have something similar to our academy to see how they work. So the jury's still out on whether at some point some virtual version of some training or an academy can be done. At this point, we haven't yet found something that works really well in that environment. We're hopeful though that sometime this fall we'll be able to resume academies. It's hard to tell though. That if we do hold academies, these academies will certainly look a bit different that until there's a vaccine and everyone feels truly, truly comfortable with them. So in order to maintain proper social distancing, the academies that we are planning to attempt to move forward with in the fall will not have 75 attendees. We normally cap attendance at 75. We'll be capping them at 50 or maybe even 45 to get the social distancing proper within the rooms, and we'll be working closely with the hotels to configure everything properly. Most the larger lines of the hotels have already been hard at work to update their own health and safety measures for everything from sleeping rooms to food service and their restaurants and things of that nature. So they appear to be pretty well on top of this. For instance, things like buffet lines for our lunch service, those will be a thing of the past going forward. Everything will be converted over to something that's far, far safer. So again, we'll be playing this by ear. It's hard to say right now when we'll be able to resume academies. The earliest one that we would consider doing at this point is in September, but we'll be playing it by ear based upon how things go over these next few months.
So, a lot to keep checking up on the website. Now, the timing of launch of Cosmos, our digital platform, really in a lot of ways couldn't have been better. What's the latest on Cosmos and how compliant people can use it?
Yeah, good question, good point. It's funny in a way how crises kind of force us to change, and often some of those changes really benefit us. All of a sudden, some of our readers of our magazines and our newsletters weren't getting their publications in the office because they couldn't go into the office. Then all of a sudden, they realize that they have digital access to those same publications on Cosmos, and they may not have ever even logged into Cosmos before because they were accustomed to reading their paper edition. But in a way, some of them are forced to. So they start logging on to Cosmos to read the magazine, and all of a sudden they realize, it's a little different. Takes a little bit of getting used to if you're not used to reading a digital publication. But in the end, you realize it's an even richer experience in that you've got all these links to reference materials and things like that that are cross-referenced, in a digital publication that you don't get in the paper publication. In terms of what's on Cosmos, initially the focus was, of course, converting and publishing the current issues of our two flagship magazines, CEP Magazine and CT Magazine, in a digital format. And then we followed that by going back and converting the last few years' worth of magazines to a digital format so that there was a kind of a searchable and indexed catalog of material for the two magazines, as well as the premium newsletters that we publish. Then our other publications are converted, like our books now have both a paper and a digital counterpart to the books, including the massive, complete compliance and ethics manual. The beauty of the digital version of that CCEM is that readers can now, they can view new and updated chapters as they become available, as they become ready. We can post them right into Cosmos rather than readers having to wait for an annual printed edition with all the updated material, and it's theirs. As soon as it's ready to be published, it's online within Cosmos. So that CCEM is just an incredibly valuable publication. And again, it's very rich, in the Cosmos environment. In terms of what's on the horizon for Cosmos, there's a lot of work currently being done on a lot of what we call databases. So a lot of sizable databases of other important reference material are going to be unveiled this fall within Cosmos. So for instance, rather than currently some of the references in an article or in the CCEM take you to an external source for, say, a regulation or a law or something like that, we're going to begin housing much more of that content within Cosmos so that the references will be quicker and richer and indexed and referenced within Cosmos, rather than you having to go to an exterior, an external type of a site to get to the reference material. One other exciting project that's underway within Cosmos is taking some of the content from our past conferences and indexing it and making it searchable within Cosmos. When you think about it, some of the most valuable information that our members get comes in the form of the presentations that experts and specialists provide at our conferences. A lot of time and effort goes into those presentations. Now, we've always made those slide presentations available on our website after the conference, but they're just sort of listed by conference, and you can kind of go find them that way. But by embedding them within Cosmos and tagging them and indexing them, they're going to be fully searchable, organized in a manner that if you want to look up a topic, you'll find written content, you'll find presentations, you'll find articles. So Cosmos is going to keep getting richer. So we'll unveil the first of that sort of batch of information later this fall, and then we'll just keep building it from there. So there's a lot going on with Cosmos. These are a few of the most exciting things, though, that are in store in the immediate future.
So speaking of unveiling, we just unveiled a new member benefit that I think is pretty exciting for our members. Do you want to share some information about that? We've already sent it out, but a lot of people may not be aware of it yet.
Sure. We've begun providing members with what'll end up being four web conferences per year at no additional charge whatsoever. So enabling members to stay up to date, earn their continuing education units at no additional charge. So at $100 per web conferences per web conference, this amounts to basically about a $400 increase in value for your membership. So very exciting.
Very indeed, and we've already embarked on this and gotten some good response. Well, Jerry, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today, and I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turtletaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.